You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS.
And Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Thursday, October 18th, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, talking about his cover piece in Nation magazine, Greg Palast, on Mitt Romney's bonanza. No, I don't know if he made billions, but certainly millions on, can you believe it? The GM bailout. I don't like government doing that, but I will take a huge chunk of that cash. Also on the program today, CEO pay, a joke. A cruel joke, but nevertheless, a joke. Fiscal cliff, well, president vowing, jump off that thing. Of course, we will have to wait and see who will be the president at that time. A little bit of house cleaning. Yesterday, I incorrectly told you that we would have Christopher Freeland today. It's actually next Thursday. So it will be on a Thursday. It just will not be on this Thursday. Greg Palast got this blockbuster piece in The Nation, and we were fortunate enough to have him join us today, and he will be on in just a few minutes. I mentioned this briefly on the members program yesterday, which, of course, you could receive if you became a member at majority.fm. Very easy to do. And really, just pennies compared to what you pay for cable or a newspaper subscription or whatever money you're giving to the massive corporate entities that are telling you the news. But be that as it may, outside the debate, the other night in out in Long Island, New York, Jill Stein, the Green Party presidential nominee, who was on this program several weeks ago, I guess, can't remember exactly the date because time has I'm incapable of telling time anymore. Jill Stein was on this program. She was out outside of the perimeter of the Hofstra debate, protesting the fact that she's not allowed to participate. Now, the debate commission, which of course is really just representatives from the two parties, determined that you cannot participate in a debate unless you have 15% support measured in some of the major national polls. Now, of course, these major national polls don't pose the question, do you support anybody but the two major candidates? So essentially, the commission has the whole thing rigged so that it will only be the Republican and Democratic nominees. Jill Stein and her vice presidential nominee, Sherry Hunkala, I don't know if Hunkala, am I saying that correctly? We're basically protesting. They were sitting, as far as I could tell, in the middle of a street from the video. But, of course, it's not a street that's open to traffic. And the ostensibly, they were arrested as part of a bigger protest. But it turns out from all reports that there were virtually no other protesters arrested. She was on Amy Goodman's program, Democracy Now. I guess this was yesterday. Where she said, we were held at a facility, this is after they were arrested, especially created for detaining protesters at the debates. It appeared to be a warehouse which had been specifically especially equipped. It was obviously, you know, they were prepared to handle a lot of people. They had 13 officers there and three plainclothesmen. For most of the time, it was just Sherry Hangala and myself, yet they felt the need to keep us in tight plastic restraints tightly secured to metal chairs. There's been reports that they were held there for hours. Just one more example of the infringement upon our First Amendment rights. Now, I suppose there's an argument as to why you need some type of cutoff for people running for president. Because there's a lot of people running for president. But certainly the Green Party candidate is at least a nationally known candidate. Now, I'm not exactly sure what the mechanism is here. But there's a wide gulf between you can't go into the debate and sit on the stage and debate, and we're going to lock you up for 8 hours for sitting in the middle of a road, which is not even open to traffic anyways. So just one more example. I mean, I've been to these conventions. I think I've been outside protesting at least some of these conventions. And more often than not, people are, I should say the political conventions, not any outside the debates. But more often than not, there's a chained-off area where protesters go. In this instance, I'm not even sure they had that, but they had no problem cuffing this presidential candidate, which is just bizarre. So you can head over to Democracy Now!, see that interview in full at democracynow.org. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Greg Palast. Today's show is sponsored by the website HoldYourNoseAndVoteObama2012.com. W.C. Fields once said, hell, I never voted for anybody. I always voted against. In other words, for informed, pissed off liberals, try not to think of it as a vote for Barack Obama. Instead, think of it instead as a vote against Mitt Romney. Might ease the pain a bit. Visit HoldYourNoseAndVoteObama2012.com. Over 300 people in Tunisia have. Our section on Obama's persistent admiration for Michael Vick is a web exclusive. Items with the Hold Your Nose and Vote Obama2012.com logo are available on the site as well. Hold Your Nose and Vote Obama2012.com. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. It is a pleasure to welcome to the program the author of the New York Times bestsellers, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, Armed Madhouse, Vulture's Picnic, and his brand new, more or less, Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, How to Steal an Election in 9 Easy Steps, available at all the outlets you would imagine, from GregPalast.com. Greg, welcome to the program.
Great to be with you, Sam.
Now, you've got a blockbuster story, which is the on the cover of the Nation magazine. I believe it's the November 5th edition. It's available yes. now at their site.
Just came out.
Now, it's about the GM bailout, and particularly a specific subset of that bailout, and who managed to make millions upon millions of dollars from it. But this is pretty weedy stuff. Walk us through this. We know in broad strokes that had it not been for the government providing essentially what functions as a bridge loan, GM and perhaps Chrysler and certainly all the subsidiary companies that feed and provide equipment for this would have gone out of business. We would have had millions of people unemployed.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. It's real simple. As it turns out, Mr. Romney, Governor Romney, who said, let Detroit go bankrupt to oppose the, as he said, Detroit doesn't need a check. It turns out that he was a silent partner with three hedge fund billionaires. They're known as vulture funds, headed by his main donor, Paul Singer, who's known as the Vulture. And these three hedge fund billionaires made over $4 billion, all from the U.S. taxpayer. And as it turns out, in my investigations, I found out that one Ann Romney earned at least $15 million, but more likely around $100 million as the Romney's piece of the action from the government bailout funds. This is one of the weirdest, creepiest stories I've ever been on, Sam. It's in the book, Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, but I expanded it out and continued the hunt for The Nation, which came out today as their big cover story. So the Romneys made tens of millions of dollars secretly, complex financial structure to hide it. Romney's three big donors, including his main donor, earned about $1 billion and change each.
Well, that's significantly more than I've made, well, in the first 6 months of this year. I got to wait and see how the year ends out.
You'll get your W-2.
Okay, so let's walk through this.
But how do they do it is, I guess, the question.
Exactly. Go ahead. Walk us through this now.
Okay. I'm going to simplify it, obviously, because they don't want it to be simple. But what happened was is that GM has split off the old Delco auto parts division into a company they called Delphi, which went bankrupt, okay, which Romney thought was a great idea. Remember, let them go bankrupt. Okay, and so Romney's buddies, Romney's big donor, Paul the Vulture Singer, John Paulson, and Dan Loeb, who used to be Obama's big backer and switched, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They bought up the auto parts division of General Motors out of the bankruptcy court for 67 cents a share for peanuts. They then flipped it after they got in about $12 billion plus in U.S. money. Their 67 cents was now worth $22 a share. That's a 3,000% profit, a nice payday care of the U.S. taxpayers. They then, this is not the end of it, whereas General Motors did its best to save jobs and pensions, Delphi had, the Romney Group, had 29 U.S. plants. They shut down 28 of them and moved them to China. There is not one single UAW worker left in the auto parts division, the former auto parts division of General Motors. General Motors gets its parts now from China, from the Romney operation. And every UAW member lost their job, every single one, 25,200 UAW members. In addition, you were hearing, and then they did this cute thing where the Delphi salaried workers, non-union workers, lost big hunks of their pensions because the Romney Group simply cut them off and said, we're not paying. This is not, and this was blamed on Obama in these commercials. These commercials were, there's $7 million of commercials blaming Obama for the loss of these pensions. Well, these pensioners don't have $7 million who don't have I've talked to some. There's suicides. There's bankruptcies. There's foreclosures. This was done by Romney's group that said we're not going to pay. And the government can't pay because it's against the – people don't understand. It's against the law for the government to pay those extra amounts.
Right.
It's,
okay.
It's right in the law.
All right. No, so wait a second. So I want to go back here. Okay. So we've got GM is on the brink of going under. And
right.
The government steps in and says – basically with TARP funds – and says, mm-hmm. okay, we're going to make sure, because the problem that was facing GM, it was mm-hmm. twofold. One is they're on the brink of bankruptcy. If you had let them go into bankruptcy, the idea that they could have reorganized and come out of bankruptcy was virtually impossible because for two reasons. Because one, no one is going to buy a GM car from a company that is bankrupt because they don't know if this company is going to be around in 2 years, if their car breaks down, and then anybody's going to be making parts for them, A. And B, when you go into bankruptcy, you need to find somebody who's going to provide loans and who's going to
That's
work
right.
out a deal with all the creditors. And GM, because they get their parts from literally thousands of small companies, one of whom is a bigger company, Delphi,
yeah, they're giant.
That these creditors, you have to arrange with all these creditors to accept the terms of the bankruptcy. And nobody was going to step in and provide a huge enough bridge loan so that there would be time to work it out with all these creditors. So you needed
that's exactly right.
Essentially a bridge loan from an entity like the U.S. government to give everybody some sense of assurance that GM was going to come out of this. So
the
government
has
to negotiate. The government sits down and has to negotiate with some of the biggest creditors. One of those was Delphi.
Yeah, but here's what happened. They sat down with Delphi. And understand, the U.S. Treasury, General Motors, had a plan to save the jobs at Delphi. General Motors was going to buy back Delphi.
Okay.
Okay. Like they're just gonna. They remember they spun off in their desperation. They got rid of their auto parts division. They got rid of their finance unit. Now they're trying to buy back their finance unit and their auto parts division. They worked out a deal with the U.S. Treasury, which would have saved about half the jobs in the U.S. The auto parts division. They would have saved 14 of those 28 factories. Okay. And they worked out a deal where the nominal head of the company would be Tom Gorries, the billionaire who is the owner of the Detroit Pistons. He comes from Flint, Michigan, where the Delphi plant was at stake. So he said, I'm worth $10 billion. I'll throw in $500 million into this I'm a Michigan man. So the deal was announced. You have to understand, the U.S. government GM and the owner of the Detroit Pistons said, we'll buy back Delphi, we'll save most of the jobs, the union jobs, and we'll keep – and basically it'll be back in General Motors' control. These vulture fund operators, Paul the Vulture Singer and his hidden partner, Romney, who obviously wasn't in the room because he's a silent partner, limited partner is the term, actually told the auto – the U.S. Treasury, if you don't give us the $12 billion we want, and right now, we are shutting down all auto parts deliveries. We will shut down the industry. That means you lose General Motors and Chrysler. And as it turns out, General Motors didn't keep any steering wheels and steering columns in inventory. They'd have been shut down in 24 hours.
So people should be understanding about this now. Singer owned a big piece of Delphi, but he teamed up with these other vulture hedge fund guys, and they quietly, while this deal was being announced, bought up the rest of Delphi so that they can control enough to basically quash this deal, which would have saved about half the jobs for Americans.
Well, I got to tell you, yes, the chief – I was able to get a confidential deposition from the courts of the chief financial officer of Delphi, who said Singer the Vulture swooped in after the U.S. GM Detroit Pistons deal was created, after it was publicly announced and deal was done and dusted, jobs saved, you know, the whole thing. After that deal was announced, he went in and bought $1 billion of old bonds, you know, from the bankrupt company that cost nothing. And he bought them up in 2 weeks, $1 billion in face value of bonds, which he bought up for peanuts. And without any, and then suddenly said, oh, by the way, I happen to own this company now. Forget your deal.
And Go ahead.
That's what it, so and then so what happened was is that he it was a brilliant financial maneuver done in coordination with these other hedge fund operators, and able to you know, the bankruptcy court had no choice. There's the way the weird laws of bankruptcy were that this could bid these old bonds as if they were worth their full value. It's a complex transaction called a credit bid, but it absolutely floored. It took the auto team, GM, everyone was completely stunned and shocked that they'd pulled off this stunt, especially because, and then they said, and by the way, so we're going to shut you down. Your General Motors will be shut down. Chrysler will be shut down. We're taking over. That's it. And we want this money. We want $6 billion from the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, which is the U.S. government. And we want another $6 billion from GM. And since GM doesn't have any money, it has to come from TARP. And by the way, at that time, the U.S. government owned 80% of GM. So they said, GM, via TARP, has to give us $6 billion. And the Pension Guarantee Corporation, Treasury, U.S. Treasury, has to give us another $6 million. Billion, thank you very much, or we shut you down. And the U.S. GM and the U.S. Treasury just felt they said it was extortion. That's the word used by the auto bailout chief. He said it was extortion, but they had no choice.
Right. What are you going to do at that point? You're going to allow essentially 1.5 million people? Because once GM and Chrysler goes down, all these other subsidiary companies go down. The guys who make the ball bearings in some small company in, you know, whatever it is, in Ohio or in Michigan with 25 employees, whatever. There's literally hundreds of these type of small companies in that area. And it would have just been a cascading of disaster.
Yes, and so I wish that that Obama had handled that his team, that he used a better team. There's creepier parts of this story, which I am still going to break. Obama's team should have done a much better job and assume that when they're dealing with creeps, and I don't use that word very often, okay, as a BBC journalist, which is where this story started. I don't often deal with vultures. If you're going to deal with guys like Paul Singer, you'd better be ready for the worst type of financial flim-flam and attack. But what I think shocked everyone is when Singer and the Romney group simply shut every plant, said goodbye. We don't want a single UAW. They made a point of it. They issued a statement saying, we are happy to announce we will not have one single UAW member. That's it. We're done. And so, and they moved it all to China.
And they moved all of that production to China.
Not some of it. All of it. All of it. Okay? They moved the entire operation to China. There's not one UAW member left. Yes, there are some plants, I should say, when I say China. There's a couple of other Asian plants, which, by the way, they used some of the money that they got from the U.S. government to buy, when they did the shift, to buy an operating auto parts plant from a company called Bain Capital. Okay, they gave $1 billion, pieced off $1 billion to Bain to buy one of Bain's Asian operations to then send back parts to Detroit. There are no Delphi parts, not one. The biggest Delphi remains the biggest provider of parts to General Motors and Chrysler, and none of it's made in America anymore. It's all shipped in. This is the Romney Group. And what you have to understand, I started this. If you go into billion, you get the story of this particular aspect of the deal from the Nation story that's out today at nation.com. But if you want like the full background of the vulture and his lockup with Romney and the battle with Obama that he's had and Hillary Clinton, that's in the whole story is in Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, which out 4 weeks now, all 4 weeks, I have to say, have been on the New York Times bestseller list. Because I think because it has a comic book in the middle by Ted Rall, but I like to think it's from my writing. But this started out. You have to understand. I started investigating the vulture Singer for BBC in the Congo. This is where this story began. I was investigating flim flam in the Congo by these financial operators, and I'm looking through Singer's records, and I see Ann Romney. Right? What is this? So that's when. I started digging in, and they nested it in all these little you know, creepy shells. They put the Ann Romney Blind Trust, which isn't so blind, but nevertheless, I mean, because if I can see it, obviously Mitt Romney can see it. He was a CEO of a hedge fund. He knows how to read these financials.
Well, we also know that Mitt Romney famously said that these blind trusts are basically a ruse.
Are just a ruse, right. And so first, you have to understand what happens when this guy, when Mitt gives his money to Ann Romney, because she didn't have anything. If it was under Mitt's name, he would have to declare if the profit were over $50 million, which I'm quite certain it is. But because he put it in Ann's name, wives of candidates do not have the same disclosure requirements as the candidates themselves. So he shifted the money to Ann. She gave it to the vulture. And then he put it into all these TARP plays, as he calls them, Delphi, Chrysler, and now the GM finance unit, Ally. And so this is only the beginning of their take from the TARP funds, the Romney family. Nice.
Now we can't really know exactly what the exact dollar figure is, right? Because, of course, we've only seen a year and a half, if that much, of the Romney's tax returns.
Well, they didn't make it even that easy for you. Yes, I've asked them, obviously, again, for their tax returns. I've asked all these people for more information. I know that they made at least $15 million, but our best estimate would be $115 million. The vulture operators moved Delphi's incorporation from Troy, Michigan, to the Isle of Jersey, which is in the English Channel, this little tax haven in the English Channel. So Delphi is basically living in this, operating from this tax haven. So in Billionaires and Ballot Bans, I explained that one of the reasons that this vulture investor, Singer, wanted to go after Obama is that one of his big attacks, with Romney money, by the way, is on the nation of Argentina. This is a huge, huge battle, which is hidden from the public. Romney and Clinton took an unusual step. Under the Constitution, they can go to court and say certain actions of American operators are a violation, are undermining the foreign policy of the United States. So Hillary Clinton, as Secretary of State, and Obama as President, used this unusual constitutional step to try to put the vulture out of business. And he's gone berserk over this. Berserk. This is not seen very much in the public. And I have to say that Obama did this. I'd like to say he did it because, he's concerned about the people of Argentina or concerned about the people of the Congo. Part of it was that the big banks, like Bank of America and Citibank, they're scared of Singer. They believe he can bring down the world financial order.
Wow.
And
so this guy's going in and basically just scooping up a lot of debt at low prices and flipping it, essentially.
Yeah, but he does it through these ransom techniques. For example, with Argentina, he just grabbed an Argentine sailing ship, like an old frigate, 200-year-old frigate. And literally, like a pirate, grabbed his ship on the high seas and has claimed it. And this is the type of thing that Clinton has said is undermining the foreign policy of the United States. This guy is trying to bring Argentina to its knees. And by the way, Romney would get a piece of it. And so one of the questions you have to ask yourself is, if Romney wins, who becomes Secretary of State? That's vital to his operation, because the Secretary of State, under the Constitution, can actually stop him. And Hillary is really a big part of this story. She's been trying to stop Singer because he's undermining all our diplomatic relations with our allies. So who is going to replace Hillary? Presumably the foreign policy chief advisor to Romney, a guy named Dan Senor. Dan Senor's day job is working for Paul the Vulture Singer.
Jeez. Well, so that's it. And of course, Dan Senor was the spokesperson for essentially Bush's illegal occupation and invasion of Iraq. I guess the really stunning aspect of this is just, how does a guy like Romney, who who speaks of how China is undermining our economy, who ostensibly, I mean, this is the one thing that I can't get over with Romney. I mean, here's a guy who's been sort of sheltering all his funds.
Right. Let me do this, Sam. I hate to say it, but everyone's screaming at me because I do have to run because I'm getting calls. But let me tell you this. I appreciate it, and I'll be happy to come back and tell you the stories that are yet to come out. And from this whole story of who the vulture is, his connection to Romney, and, by the way, he's the guy that picked out Paul Ryan for vice president. I'd love to get into that with you because you give me the chance to tell those real stories. Again, in Billionaires and Ballot Bands, you have the whole thing, but please go to nation.com and get this piece of the creepy Romney story. But I'll leave you with this thought. There's no question in my mind, and again, now here I have to speculate, so I can't tell, but that the reason Romney put his money with Singers, everyone wanted Singers' love, but Romney had something the other candidates didn't have, his own checkbook.
Right.
Pretty with Singers' creepy stuff. I'll leave you with that. See you by the way, BallotBandits.org has the information on the book, and of course, it's everywhere.
Greg Pallas, BallotBandits.org.
Billionaires and Ballot Bandits. BallotBandits.org.
And we'll put a link up on Majority.fm. Greg, thanks so much for joining us.
You're the best, Sam. Thanks. Bye.
Talk to you soon. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a minute. We've got some. Ben Stein went on Fox and Friends and made all of their heads explode. We will be back with that in just a moment. And also, apparently, tag Romney. Dude has got some, it's go time for tag Romney, apparently. We'll talk about that when we return in just a moment as well. Mentioned this briefly yesterday on the program. Pew Research Center, I don't know, it's interesting, particularly in the context of Mitt Romney's binder story. Apparently now there's like an entire cottage industry built up around Mitt Romney's binder.
My favorite is Amazon binder reviews have been flooded with like women sold separately and that type of thing.
What one was like, this binder was too small for my women or something like that.
And, you know, the interesting angle on this that a couple of people have pointed out on the binder story is that Mitt Romney basically came out and said, I mean, despite the fact that did he lie about the story? Yes. Somebody actually commented yesterday that I undersold how big of a lie it was, because he did not request a binder of suggestions as to which women he could hire in his administration. The binder was already preassembled for him by women, a bipartisan group of women who had got together, assembled this, to give to whoever won the governor's race in Massachusetts. So he fibbed a little bit, made it look like he was looking for suggestions as to how he could bring some type of gender parity to his administration. But the interesting thing is what he's espousing is fundamentally a fairly good argument for affirmative action. In other words, that we've got to go out of our way to make sure that we have some type of fair representation of the general population. At the end of the day, this is the entire theory and, for the most part, the total practice of what we consider affirmative action in this country. Now, you're not going to hear anybody say to Mitt Romney, it's nice to see you embrace affirmative action and have him respond to this. But that's the reality of it. And it just an interesting poll in Pew Research that came out, I guess it was from last year, but young women now surpass young men in importance they place on having a high-paying career or profession. It's according to Pew, 2/3, 66% of young women ages 18 to 34 rate career high on their list of life priorities, compared with 59% of young men. In 1997, 56% of young women and 58% of young men felt the same way. Now, of course, one of Mitt Romney's arguments when it came up to gun control in the debate was guns aren't the reason why we have violence. The reason why we have violence, of course, is because people like Murphy Brown, I don't think he said Murphy Brown, but because of single-parent households. Now, that doesn't explain why Tag Romney is exhibiting such violent tendencies, because as far as I know, Tag Romney came from a very traditional household. I mean, I think his mom was doing a lot of, you know, well, I don't know if she was actually doing any cooking. But certainly back in the salad days when they were living off of the stock portfolio that Mitt Romney's dad had given him, it was probably a lot of ramen. But here is Tag Romney exhibiting his violent tendencies on some type of morning talk show just the other day, which really flies in the face of Mitt Romney's theory. Here it is.
This is where the triangle comes to talk. Talk Radio 850 WPTF and WPTF.
This is where the triangle comes to talk. Hey, we got Mitt Romney's son Tag on the phone. Here we go.
.com. It's the Bill LeMay. It's the Bill LeMay. It's the Bill LeMay show.
Well, what an honor. It really is. Tag Romney is in the house. He's, of course, the son of Governor Mitt Romney. And how appropriate, after a debate, he's in town.
Bill LeMay. Tag Romney in the
house.
In the house.
I guess knocking on some doors and also talking to some folks. And, Tag, what a pleasure and an honor. Thank you for taking time for us today and coming down.
Bill, thanks for having me on. It's an honor to be here with you.
Okay, I'm going to ask something I know a lot of people want to know, or at least I do. What is it like for you to hear the President of the United States call your dad a liar? How do you react to that?
Well, jump out of your seat and you want to rush down the debate stage and take a swing at him. But you know you can't do that because, first, because there's a lot of Secret Service between you and him. But also because this is the nature of the process. That, you know, they're going to try to do everything they can do to try to make my dad into someone he's not. We signed up for it. We got to kind of sit there and take our punches and then send him right back the other way.
So you have Tag Romney. Look, this isn't this isn't earth shattering, but the notion of privilege that these guys have, that it wouldn't even occur to them that, like, you know, maybe I shouldn't in public say that I want to punch the president in the head. Maybe I should just show a little bit more decorum. Now, of course, we know one of the things the right has tried to do is made this argument that Mitt Romney is more virile because he had five sons, and President Obama a little bit more metrosexual because he had two daughters. Now, I'm not sure that you have control over that, but it is sort of interesting to just see the level of just self-aggrandizement. I mean, it's the same attitude that Mitt Romney had when he was on the stage there. The guy has zero respect. Everyone is the hired help. And the only reason why Tag Romney didn't go down there is because of the Secret Service. Otherwise, I would have taken this dude out. Nobody messes with my dad. Well, my name isn't Tag. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. So,
I like how he said it and he's like chuckling, like, oh, obviously I'm laughing, but I really couldn't do it because of the Secret Service. I'm going to give you the actual reason why I couldn't do it.
Right. Right. And then, of course, it's because I remember that we're in a political campaign and my dad refers to President Obama as being foreign, having foreign talk. And we have basically run this campaign on the notion that, you know, you don't want someone who is so foreign to be in charge of the we're not arguing that he's from Kenya. But, you know, unbelievable. All right. Well, we're going to get to we're going to take a break. And as soon as we get back, we will play that Ben Stein clip because it really is refreshing. I mean, Ben Stein, look, the guy believes that the Earth is only 6,000 years old. But even he has the good sense to basically say that the Laffer curve is a joke. The notion that you get more revenue with less taxes is a complete fallacy, and he says it to the faces of Fox and Friends who are completely befuddled by this. Not just the fact that they have someone who is refuting this Ayn Randian sort of truth, but also that they would do it on Fox. He must not be a paid contributor. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back after this.